Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
It is Tuesday, so it is time to ask some coronavirus questions. And we have a bunch this week, so we're focused on this big question of pandemic COVID versus endemic COVID. Where are we in that transition? Are wide changes in masking policies ahead of the curve, behind the curve, right on time? What does it take to boost boosters, meaning both getting more people to get the shot and when we might need to boost ourselves with a new booster? Again, so much to ask. So with us now, Dr. Gabriela Andujar-Vazquez, infectious disease physician and associate hospital epidemiologist at Tufts Medical Center. Dr. Andujar-Vazquez, welcome back to Radio Boston. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me. Always happy to be here.
Oh, and we're glad to have you. We have a lot of questions of our own this week, doctor, so I'm going to stick with you and me, but next week we will open up the phones to callers again. So let's start with Boston Mayor Michelle Wu's move to eliminate the city's vaccine, proof of vaccination requirement. Right time to do that? Too fast? Bit of both? What do you think?
I think that we're in a point now, thankfully, where, cases are down. We went through that big surge in the winter, December and January. I think it is the right time to start pulling back on a lot of the things that were put in place during, a time where we were seeing increasing cases and we needed to sort of layer up on more of the things that we know by now we should be doing to protect each other.
Do you feel like pulling back on those measures now is an important part psychologically to keeping people in the sort of compliance game in terms of keeping each other safe in the long run?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, we're getting to a point, and I think you alluded a little bit in the introduction to this topic, that where we are sort of trying to balance that risks, individual risks versus community risk, public health risk. And when we see cases that are going down and, we can try to at least predict a little bit of when that would trigger, what things would trigger cases to go up and what we need to do. I think that we're in a point where we have to balance the mental health and the ability for people to be compliant, right? Like you said, like it's hard to just, be at home, do nothing, not be able to do anything for an indefinite period of time. And I think it's not something that's necessary anymore. I think we know a bit more every day on how to handle this, virus.
So, for a while now, several weeks, we've had conversations, heard conversations about this continuum from a pandemic to something endemic. I mean, it's with us and we learn to live with it. Last Friday, we had Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley on air, and I asked her where she thought we were in that evolution, for lack of a better word. And she said, we would love to be done with COVID, but COVID is not done with us. And she really came down quite firmly. We're still in the pandemic era here. Do you agree, A, and how do we know when we've crossed from a pandemic to something we learned to live with?
Right. I think that's the challenging part, because it's not like one day we're in a pandemic and the next day we're endemic, right? And I think it's something that's of a continuum where different things have to happen before we even call endemic something endemic. For example, we would have never thought of calling this endemic at all before vaccines were available, right? We wouldn't even before the vaccines thought of calling it endemic, because we know that the virus was new to humans, right? And that we at the very beginning we had to learn how it transmit. We learned that we had to learn how to mitigate that transmission, right, and break that chain of cycle of infection, and then jumping to vaccines, and developing therapeutics. Availability of treatment is part of one of the components of when we might be able to call a novel organism endemic or not. And then, so, the congressman was right in that we are still in that sort of in between part where we know that we probably won't be in the next years, won't eradicate completely this virus, right? We know that now, as a year and a half maybe ago, we weren't that sure if that was going to be the case. We thought that maybe we could eliminate it as we did, as it happened with SARS-CoV-1, right? MERS and the other SARS viruses that were kind of completely eradicated, but this didn't happen in this case. And so now we're in that transition part of this continuum between when we can definitely call it endemic. And, you know, we're still behind in the efforts on vaccination globally, efforts on access to therapeutics equitably. So I think there's a long way to go in terms of access to a lot of the things that I just mentioned. But at least in mitigation risk for us, an individual, I think we have the tools to be able to protect ourselves and others. And we just have to remember that this will change, right? That right now we're lifting certain things, but maybe in spring or in summer, that may be different. And we have to learn how to slowly be able to live with that.
So we have the technology to protect the individual from serious risk or harm and to treat COVID, and that moves us towards the endemic. But on a global scale, we don't have the uptake, the distribution, the supply that we need to get it to everyone, and that keeps us vulnerable to pandemic. Is that basically what you're saying?
Yeah, that is exactly it. And, you know, within our own communities, we know that they're still vulnerable, all right? And there will always be, right? We know that as we compare, for example, COVID with other viruses that like flu or other, you know, respiratory syncytial viruses, things that are more deadly or more severe in certain age groups or certain vulnerable populations like weak immune system patients, we know that there are layers to this and that for the general population, there might be an individual risk that's more acceptable than for certain populations that are not there yet. And that's understandable. I mean, like if I was, an elderly patient and also with medical problems that weaken my immune system, I know that I need to protect myself and probably more so than any other individual around me. And so that's the key, that's the challenge, balancing the needs for those that are most vulnerable versus, you know, the mental health and balance of society, right, within a pandemic. So
we are asking the doctor here on Radio Boston with Gabriela Andujar-Vazquez, an infectious disease physician and associate hospital epidemiologist at Tufts Medical Center. I want to talk about a couple of pain points now. We'll do a couple of political pain points. We'll do a couple of medical pain points. I'm holding a KF94 in my hands, the one I wear at work. I change it every few days. It's more comfortable than some of the masks I've worn in the past. I don't know when I get to take it off at work. Lots of people don't know when they get to take their masks off. But some cities and towns, for example, are saying you don't have to do that inside anymore. Why are masks a flashpoint? And when do we get to the point where they stay home?
Right. Yeah, I think that one, we're definitely in terms of masks, we're definitely there where we just blankly do not recommend certain populations to wear a mask to protect themselves. One thing that, you know, we have to remember, if you're unvaccinated, that's where you are most vulnerable or most at risk of contracting the virus and also to transmitting to others. So that patient population that has not gotten a single dose of a vaccine are sort of in a different group clinically and I think, from public health perspective in regards to masks. But now once you're fully vaccinated and boosted, that risk for yourself and decreases. And if the risk for you to have an infection decreases significantly, then it also automatically decreases the risk for you to transmit, right? Because mm-hmm. you're less likely to get infected, even though we know with the Omicron variant that's more circulating mostly in the US that, you know, that effectiveness of that vaccine towards infection did decrease significantly the past couple of weeks, with or without booster. But in terms of mask, I think we're at the point where we are able to lift all those mandates that are like broad, statewide or citywide, and mainly go to an advisory where we are encouraging people to protect themselves, with especially the ones that are vulnerable that I just mentioned, right? Unvaccinated. And consider having a well-fitted mask that's comfortable. But I think that we are in debate on whether exactly we would consider to lift all mask mandates, for example, in public transportation and other areas where it's still something that it hasn't been discussed of when we would do that.
But in general, it sounds like you're saying we're at the moment where it's time for mask wearing to be about personal safety and personal choice, supported exactly. when people want to do it, but no longer mandated by government.
Exactly.
So you talked at the beginning of that answer about how much more at risk we are when unvaccinated. Here in the Commonwealth, 77% of the state fully vaccinated, but that leaves 23%. We understand some of that is kids, and we still have an age cohort of kids that even can't be vaccinated. But for those adults who can and could have been, and it's been a long time now, are we ever going to move the needle with them? I'm sorry, no pun intended there. Or is this just where we are now?
I'm hoping, you know, I was looking at numbers from the CDC nationwide. And actually, in those age groups that are young adults between 12 and 30-ish, we are seeing a small daily increase in first doses. And I don't know if that is just like a post-Omicron, now I feel like I should get the vaccine or not. I'm not entirely sure personally on why we're seeing a small, but I'm hopeful that, you know, at this point that the individuals that have held back that can get a vaccine are eligible due to age and have no medical contraindications to get a first dose, that do get it, because there's plenty of data now. And, you know, we have a fully approved, two fully approved vaccines now, Pfizer and Moderna, approved at the FDA. And, you know, so much data availability now. And so I would really, and it's clear that if you're unvaccinated, no matter the age, you're extreme risk for severe illness, right? So I really hope that the needle could be moved a little bit, but I wonder what would make that happen after, you know, a year of and a couple of months of this vaccine being available in the U.S.
Well, that is Dr. Gabriela Andujar-Vazquez, infectious disease physician and associate hospital epidemiologist at Tufts Medical Center, and often generous with her time doing Ask the Doctors with us here on Radio Boston. Doctor, as usual, thanks for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.